From the weird, like the firing and return of a chaplain, to the sad, publication of a dying Senator John McCain's memoirs, Congress returns to a jumbled picture. It has a long list of budgetary and confirmation matters to attend to. Joining me for the Outlook, Roll Call Senior Editor David Hawkins. And I guess we are facing an unusual week.
It's an unusual week. It's also an unusual start to an unusually long period of Congress being in session, by which I mean three consecutive weeks, believe it or not, is one of the longest stretches that they'll be in town between now and the election. And Memorial Day, they take another week off, and then they're back for, I think, three or maybe it's 4 weeks, and then July 4th week off, and then a few weeks, and then all of August off. So there are a few short bursts of time when Congress is going to be around, and as you say, confirmations and the routine, what's supposed to be the routine budget matters, but never really are really all they've got to do. Any other policy making, any big ideas for the whole infrastructure thing, that's gone. There's really no big policy thing on their agenda this year. It's just routine business.
The military armed services have chaplains.
Correct.
Federal agencies on the civilian side don't have them. What does the chaplain in Congress do? Why do they have one? And what is the status of the poor chaplain that seems to be in and out?
So the chaplain has actually been around since the very start of Congress. It was actually one of the first things the very first Congress did was create chaplains for both the House and the Senate. Courts have ruled, and as recently as a few years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that it's okay for a governmental body to have a chaplain so long as that chaplain doesn't prefer one religion over the other. This chaplain, the House chaplain, his principal duties are providing an opening prayer every day, which he doesn't always provide, and so he is out there finding people of other faith traditions to come and give the opening invocation at the start of every day's House session. And he also acts as kind of as a pastor to the 435 members of the House, provides them with, he'll talk to them. He'll pay attention to their sort of pastoral needs and get them help if they need it.
Sure. So that means on a Monday they could have a priest, on a Tuesday they could have a rabbi, and on a Wednesday
correct.
They could have an imam.
Correct. And then that's an example that's actually been true, right? And then a Presbyterian minister, and then, and then a Hindu priest, and right, and so on. So this guy, Frank Conroy, is the Father Conroy is the second Roman Catholic chaplain ever in the history of the House. The first one was his predecessor. This is at a time where Catholicism has grown to be the clear plurality religion in the House. 40% of the House is Roman Catholic. And it seemed like things were going along swimmingly, and then suddenly Conroy submitted a letter of resignation saying that the Speaker had asked him to resign. We still don't have a clear understanding of why, not a stated understanding of why. There are lots of there's lots of speculation. There's the chief of staff to the Speaker appears to have said something to Conroy that made Conroy think that he was the victim of an anti-Catholic bias. There are others that believe that Conroy had said some things that made it seem as though he was sort of insensitive to the effects of the Me Too movement on Capitol Hill. But for whatever reason, it seemed for a few days as though he'd been essentially fired. Once this became a hubbub, once members of Congress, particularly Democrats, but some Republicans too, said this was, where did this come from and who authorized Paul Ryan to fire this guy that the entire House had voted to hire, Conroy rescinded his resignation letter. And Paul Ryan, lame duck speaker, not going to be around past the November elections, essentially was forced to accept the fact that Conroy had stood him up and said, I'm not going to accept your request that I resign.
Wow. Well, that takes care of Paul Ryan's prospects of being the envoy to the Vatican.
I think it absolutely does, which was actually what his predecessor, Nancy Pelosi, was thinking she might want to be had Hillary Clinton been elected president. So there you go.
All right. We're speaking with Roll Call Senior Editor David Hawkins on a more, substantial matter is the confirmation hearings of Gina Haspel for
right.
CIA. And then there were reports in The Washington Post over the weekend that even she was having second doubts looking at the hearings she was going to face. What's going to happen now, do you think?
So I think the hearing is on Wednesday, Senate Intelligence Committee. As you and the listeners are probably aware, if you're listening to this show, the Senate is on a knife's edge of division, 51 to 49. One of those 51 Republican senators is John McCain, who is showing is in failing health and is not expected to return to the Capitol anytime soon. So it's the margin for error and the margin for mistakes is extremely narrow for any nominee, and it looks like Ms. Haspel is her record is giving plenty of people things to question and to question harshly on enhanced interrogation, on what some people call enhanced interrogation and critics just call plain old torture. So whether she is going to survive these hearings with enough votes to get through the Senate, I think remains an open question unless the vote count has changed in the last day in ways I don't understand.
It seems like this is going to be more a matter of whether she has the right level of manufactured contrition versus what the reality was when she might have been carrying out a program that was authorized way above her and that some members of Congress knew about and approved at the time. And now we have this kind of retrojection of moral outrage.
That's an interesting way of putting it. Sure. I think you're right. Whether she says in hindsight, I shouldn't have done this, or whether this was, you know, the benefit of history, I should have stood up and said this was wrong. There are some aspects of her backstory that have given some senators reason to believe that she was not just sort of following the orders from above without questioning them, but was in fact enthusiastic about carrying out these orders.
She could still get a vote if she doesn't make it out of committee, though, correct?
That becomes a little bit dicey. Yes, there are ways in which even if the committee rejects or declines to endorse a nominee, there are parliamentary provisions for getting it to the floor. But I think if a couple of Republicans join the Democrats in opposing her in committee, those couple of Republicans would be enough, presumably, to sink her nomination on the floor.
And two other matters. We talk a lot about whether the Congress will finish the budgetary matters that it has to finish before the September 30th deadline. Ha! But what about authorization? Because almost 25% of what they appropriate money for, they haven't authorized those agencies.
Yeah, no, that's true. This is yet another way in which the budget. The budgetary system that was concocted by Congress itself about 40 years ago really isn't working. Of course, the Defense Department is the exception that highlights the problem you're talking about, which is that the year after year since the dawn of the Cold War, since 1961, I think, there has been a separate authorization for the National Defense, for the Defense Department and the nuclear activities of the Energy Department, and then a separate bill to provide the money to carry out that authorization. That is almost unique in the modern Congress. It's the only authorization bill that is routinely done again and again. I think, for example, I'm not sure there has been a State Department authorization enacted into law in the 24 years that I've been covering Congress. Maybe there's been once or twice, but I think there was one but there are many, many departments that do not get authorized but get their money anyway.
So the question is, will that change, or will they just go on and trying to get to the continuing
resolution?
This is
not a year where authorization bills are going to be happening. That's sort of circling back to what I said a couple of minutes ago. This is authorization bills are generally the ones where the fights happen. I mean, you know, the FAA authorization bill, they have big fights, for example, or the Transportation Department or the Farm Bill, which is the Ag Department, essentially, authorization. All those things could have happened this year. They're sort of up for routine authorization again. I don't think any of those is going to happen, at least not before the election.
But in skipping that step year after year, Congress does avoid one of its responsibilities, which is not just to appropriate money, but to work out policy for the United States.
Totally, totally exactly right. It's one of the reasons why there is a persistent drumbeat that's never gotten loud enough to happen, which is that Congress should think about changing its budget process to essentially a two-year cycle, which is what many state governments do, where you have the first year of a Congress. Congress focuses on authorizing and oversight, and then the second year is the appropriations process. And so you think about your policies, you see how the departments are doing, and then in that second year you're ready to make the money decisions. There is actually a committee going on right now that was as part of the tax bill, I think it was, a special congressional committee that was created to take a look at this one more time, whether they actually produce this as a recommendation, let alone that Congress approves it. I guess we'll probably know. My guess is during the lame duck session.
David Hawkins is senior editor of Roll Call. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.